This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Dr. Amy Orr Ewing has chatted a whole bunch about faith, culture, theology over the last few years. She is a director of OCCA, the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics, and is the Senior Vice President for Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. What a pleasure to be chatting to Dr. Amy now. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you today. Thank you.
You've written and released now what has ended up being quite a timely book, because you wrote this before the pandemic. It's being released right in the midst of it for so many around the world. It's called Where is God in the Suffering? A question many people could be asking at the moment. Why was suffering on your mind? Because it's maybe an unusual topic to dive into.
Yeah, sure. I've been involved in Christian ministry and speaking in apologetics and evangelism for over 20 years on university campuses and all sorts of contexts around the world. And my experience is that this question, where is God in all the suffering, is a universal question globally. People are asking this. How could it be that a loving God actually exists and this be the world that we're living in? And so in some senses, I've been writing this book for 20 years, you know, because you come across multiple kinds of suffering in life, whether it's grief through the loss of a loved one or friends and close family who've been abused as children, or whether it's a kind of suffering related to natural events like fires and viruses like we're all experiencing. And I really wanted to write a book that didn't only address the intellectual side of the question, how could this be the world we're in and God actually exist and be loving, but also really address the kind of depth and profundity and actual pain of people's lived experience. And in my experience, a lot of kind of Christian books on suffering sort of do one well. They either address the sort of philosophical dilemma well, or it's more a sort of exploration of how we feel in the midst of suffering and how we might kind of process that psychologically as Christians. And I really want to kind of bring those two elements together in a book. And this is my attempt at that.
Well, it's a very good attempt. And it's something that, as you say, addresses the question on a personal level when we are in our own pain and we're thinking, where is God? But then also the bigger question that people can be asking on a wide scale, where is God in all of this, as they just look at the chaos kind of in our world? Before we jump into a little bit of that, though, tell us about what your experience of this pandemic has been like in Oxford, in England. What's it been like for you?
Well, in the UK, we've been in a form of lockdown since early middle of March. And I've got three children who are raging extroverts and athletes. So that's presented its own kind of particular challenge personally. And obviously schooling from home, and everybody working from home. I have two friends whose mothers died, neither of whom were able to be at the bedside and sort of say goodbye properly as you would want to. I think here in the UK as well, it's caused us to reflect deeply on the inequality in our society, because if you have a home where you maybe have some outside space, your experience of lockdown has been very different from if you're, you know, lots of people locked in a tiny, tiny apartment. Obviously, if you can afford, you've kept your job and you can afford to buy food, that's a very different experience from increase in hunger. So there is a massive, massive demand on food banks here. So it's been a strange time. And I think it's caused people to reflect on what life is for, the end of life, that death that we never really think about is actually a reality. We do need to think about it, and also to think about the injustice in our own society.
Seeing those questions be asked on a mass level of what does my own mortality mean? Does my life have purpose? It's quite a bizarre moment in history to be part of, because each of us may be asked those questions individually at lots of different times in our lives, but we're all asking it together now in some kind of way. What impact do you think that's going to have on sort of society at large, the church, that we have all walked through this experience together? And to varying degrees, as you say, we've experienced suffering in our own sorts of ways. What sort of effect do you think it's going to have?
I think actually it can have quite different effects on the same people. So for some people who've really profoundly and deeply asked the question, it could lead to a deepening of faith. One of the things I try and say in this book is that questions are and doubts are not the enemy of Christian faith. The Christian worldview actually gives us a framework for processing our grief, our doubt, our anger, and our pain. And, you know, God is not sort of offended by people asking why, how can this be, even expressing outrage. But sometimes the church has a bit of a tendency to say, well, don't do that. That would be in some way sort of disloyal to God, or, you know, the whole thing might collapse if we question it. And so you have these sort of almost religious platitudes, like just have a bit more faith and don't think about it too much. And I think really depending on how we've processed these events, that's actually going to affect what the long-term impact is on us. And so I think we're going to see some Christian communities experiencing real growth and others sort of catastrophic decline, to be honest.
Why do you think that seeing suffering makes us ask, where is God? Why do you think suffering triggers that question?
Well, it's interesting. I think that if you look at this question through the lens of alternatives to Christian faith, it helps us reflect on that. So if you think about, you know, massive scale suffering of people very far away from us, whether, you know, it's the refugees caught up in the disaster in Greece or the Yazidi women or whatever it is, you know, you take an Eastern worldview and the predominant idea is the idea of karma. Lots of us are familiar with, hear that word all the time. And basically what that means is that everyone gets what their deeds deserve. Mm. So there's a sort of cycle of karma, and, you know, what you deserve catches up with you in the end, even if it's what you deserve from a previous incarnation. So you observe suffering in someone else, and the answer is people are getting what they deserve. You observe suffering in your own life, and the answer is a massive condemnation. I must have done something to deserve it. Or you look at a kind of atheistic worldview, a materialistic worldview, where as human beings, all we are is a cluster of atoms. We're just literally the physical stuff of the flesh of our bodies. And so an experience of suffering is nothing more than the flesh being torn or the body being broken in some way. It's purely material. There's no deeper sort of meaning to the suffering. And I think if we're honest, neither of those two alternatives really makes sense of our feelings about suffering. So when I observe what happened to the Yazidi women and I feel rage, I feel outrage that this could happen to women, to human beings. Mm. I've never met them. I have no evolutionary predisposition to care about their well-being, but something within me as a person, whether I'm a Christian or not, something within me as a person is utterly outraged that this could happen. And I think that rage is only explained by the Christian worldview. And that tells us that human beings, whether they believe in God or not, are created in the image of God, that there is a sacredness, that there is a preciousness to human life. And so even our response to the suffering of others actually points us to the existence of a loving God who made us and who gives our lives meaning and purpose and sacredness. So I actually think that the question of suffering, if we really think about it, points us towards a loving God and not away from him.
You explain that so wonderfully because it's something that is, it's such a complex mystery in so many ways. I recently spoke to somebody who said that within our Christian faith, that question of how we do serve a loving God and yet how they're suffering, that's one of the greatest mysteries and the greatest tensions within the Christian faith. But you've summed it up so well. And in it, though, I do wonder, for some people suffering, and you hear testimonies about this all the time, people telling their own stories of how they had the worst crisis, the worst loss, and found God in it. That's when they saw God. Mm. That's when they found faith. And then you have some people who go through the exact same kind of scenario, and yet it's when they lose their faith or deny Christ, yeah. the whole thing. Yeah. What do you think yeah. the difference is between the person who finds yeah. God in suffering and the person who completely rejects any idea of God or faith or religion yeah. or any of that?
I think that is such an important question. And for me, the sort of crux of that question is around what our preconceptions are about who God is and our expectations of a faith-filled life. You see, if we come to God with a sort of narrative of God is loving, and that means that God wants me to have the most comfortable and protected, blessed life in this world, and therefore I connect my feelings of whether God loves me or not with my experiences of the circumstances of this world, if I do that, when I have a cancer diagnosis, or when someone in my church is murdered, or when, you know, my friend goes through an experience of domestic violence, I conclude that God must not be loving because he hasn't intervened to stop it. And then I begin to conclude maybe he doesn't exist and the whole thing is made up. Now, what I find interesting about that way of looking at God is that that is not the world that the Bible describes, or the God that the Bible describes. Mm. See, what the Bible describes is that, yes, a loving God exists and he created a good world, but he created a world in which human beings have the capacity to love because we're created in his image. And that means that we also have the capacity to make decisions, because love can't be compelled. Mm. We know that as women, we know that a man cannot force us to love them. If they try to do that, that is called rape. You know, right. that is the antithesis of love. So for love to exist, freedom has to exist. We have to have the capacity to make choices. And the Bible describes a world in which love exists, but also choice exists, and that our choices have harmed ourselves, they've harmed others, they've harmed others that we are very distantly related to, so there's a knock-on effect of our selfishness, and they've also actually harmed the environment, the actual fabric of the world. So human selfishness impacts the world. You know, you can read climate change back into Genesis 3, I think. And so we don't then conclude that a loving God doesn't exist in a suffering world. We actually look at the Bible and think, wow, the experience of slavery is described in the Bible, the experience of being an oppressed people, an exiled people, the experience of being a refugee, the experience of being a woman who is raped, the experience of being someone who is murdered or has violence perpetrated against them is all described by the Bible in within a framework in which a loving God exists. But the world we live in is not just described by the Bible, it's also entered by the God of the Bible. Yeah. And that means that he willingly is subjected to the pain and suffering that the people he loves are subjected to. Mm. So in Jesus, we don't just encounter a loving God who empathizes with us from a distance, but a loving God who actually suffers with us and ultimately redemptively for us. So a suffering world is kind of diagnosed and described. There's a framework in which we can make sense of our experiences of rage and of pain and of the preciousness of life. the suffering world is then entered into, and there's this presence of God with us in suffering because Jesus has been through it all for us. That means that as he offers us his presence today, we can actually trust that and experience his love. But then the Bible also speaks of a future hope, and we lean into a future hope that one day there will be no more pain, our tears will be wiped from our eyes. So we can live as people of hope, not that I live in a bubble, I'm never going to get cancer, I'm never going to die because I'm a Christian, nothing bad's going to happen to me. No, living as people of hope that one day in eternity, God has set all things right. So there's a past, there's a presence of God in our suffering, and there's a future hope. I think that's totally unique. You don't see that in any other worldview, and it's really powerful.
And talking about the suffering that we see in Jesus' life, obviously the ultimate kind of suffering from that perspective, that he had to endure it for our salvation, for humanity at large, it's clear that suffering obviously serves some kind of purpose then. In God's picture of the world, suffering has a place and a purpose. In our own lives, when we bring it down into our human experience, what do you think the role of suffering is? Whether it is that sort of day-to-day stuff or the perhaps lower end of the spectrum, if you look at it like that, of job losses or simple things like that, right through to, as you mentioned, friends that we lose, those instances of rape or abuse of any kind of description. What do you think the role of suffering is in the human life?
I think that there's a very powerful connection between suffering and love within the Christian worldview. Suffering is an outworking and a consequence of love. You know, we feel pain because of love. You know, so whether it's the loss of a person and the realization that that is more than the loss of the atoms of their body just no longer living, it's so much deeper than that because we loved them. Or whether it's the loss of a job, the loss of a sort of experience that we've enjoyed, and then the questions that that brings up as to whether we are genuinely loved. And what I think the role of suffering in the Christian life can be is to actually deepen our experience of what it means to be loved and to love, which is, you know, the definition, one of the definitional statements of the Bible is that God is loved. So it causes us to question that. And therefore, if we do walk through it and process it with God and with his presence, to experience that love in a deeper and more profound way. I would always want to be careful about sort of presenting suffering as a sort of self-improvement tool. I think the Bible does speak about a deep work of God in the life of a believer that happens as we suffer, and that there's a sort of Christological element to that, because Jesus has suffered and redemption happens through God's love, through God's suffering. There's a deep identification with Christ, but it's not a kind of mechanistic sort of sadistic process.
Because it can be really unhealthy.
I think we have to be careful about that.
Yeah, there can be something really unhealthy with people's attachment to suffering, if you want to call it that, and when that perspective does get a little bit skewed. But it's also a really hard thing for people who have been through something truly tragic and truly traumatic to think that there was any kind of reason behind it, or that there can be good that comes from it. So from your own perspective personally, how do you find hope, and how do you recover from those times where your own suffering, your own trials have actually been just horrendous?
Well, I think step number one.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.